Apparently there's timer cards that I don't know where they are. Does anybody know where they are? Would you mind taking your cell phone?
No.
Well, when it comes, I have 10 to 15, so let's just do 5, 5, 5, and
sure.
I'll wrap up in that. And then I guess we have 3-minute pitches.
I'll do a 2 and a 1 then.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Frank.
You're welcome.
Okay. Welcome to the Favorite Big Book Passages Special Focus Meeting. My name is Kate. I'm a compulsive overeater and your speaker for this meeting.
Kate?
Hi. Yes?
I'm sorry. Is this the Let Go Absolutely?
No.
That's next door.
That's next door.
Thank you. My bad.
That's fine. All right, will all who care to please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference I won't make. Before we get started, please turn off all cell phones or other electronic devices. And B, to protect anonymity, no photography, audio, or visual recording is allowed except as recorded by the committee. Please be aware that if you are speaking or sharing and say your first name, your voice will be audible on the recording. I don't know if I'm supposed to be using this or not, but it's right there for those of you who are interested. And C, the opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent Region 2 or Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. Would somebody please read the 12? Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Would somebody please read the 12 steps? Wonderful. I just have my big book here to see if here's the traditions. So if you don't mind,
they're in college books.
Right, of course. There might be a list of them somewhere else. But thank you.
I'm Jerry, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jerry.
One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you. All right. The format for this 55-minute session is as follows. A short reading, and then I will share for 10 to 15 minutes, followed by open sharing. Again, the topic for this special focus session is favorite big book passages. The following is a reading from Voices of Recovery, March 14th, page 74. One aspect of this program that keeps us here is the promise of permanent recovery from this baffling malady, from the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous, page 83. Day after day, I admit my powerlessness over food and everything else in my life. By turning my powerlessness over to God, I am accepting help. I ask my higher power to show me His will for me and for my ability to concentrate on recovery. Reading 12-step literature reminds me that I have a disease that I can recover, from which I can recover one day at a time. The program teaches me I must commit to work and live the steps, maintaining abstinence, being accountable to my sponsor, giving service, and making amends are some of the actions that keep me in recovery. As I keep these commitments each day, I receive the healing, happiness, joy, and freedom that have eluded me before program. I'm grateful to God, to my family, to my OA family, and to all who love me unconditionally for their part in helping me become the woman I am meant to be. Permanent recovery is possible, and I am worth receiving it. I will now share my experience, strength, and hope on the topic. And thank you, Frank. Hi, everyone. I'm Kate, compulsive overeater. Hope you're all having a good birthday weekend. Diane actually approached me to speak at this meeting yesterday. So she's like, oh, my God, are you speaking anywhere? So, and she said, oh, it's the favorite Big Book passages. And at first, that little Big Book thumper in my head got super excited. Like, I can show you how I know this book. And I just want to admit that there's a lot of ego in learning this literature. It's so funny how disease can find a way to try to make me better and worse at the same time in anything. I had a sponsor once tell me my disease will use everything at its disposal, including my recovery, to kill me. And so just with humility, like, this book is a genius every time I read it. I hear something different. Quickly, my story. I first came to OA in 1999. I was 23 years old. I had I was struck abstinent. I thought I had it figured out. I thought I had the answer. I thought I had the design for a perfect life. I thought I would never feel pain again. And so when I did feel pain, I thought, my God, I'm doing something wrong. I must be doing something in my program wrong. And that just became too overwhelming. So I left for 3 years and came back about 6 years ago, 6.5 years ago. So when I came back after my relapse, my three-year relapse, I bought new books. I have books from 1999 when I first came in. And, you know, every line is underlined and highlighted, and there's notes in the margins. And my books today are largely unmarked because each time I read them, I can see something else new in them. And that's so amazing. And when Diane asked me to speak here, one of the first passages that I thought of was, you know, the Jaywalker, no, the Whiskey in the Milk passage. Anybody have a page in there? In their head, where it is.
More about alcohol than that.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. And there it is. What actually, you know, I read that story over and over and over again. Is anyone not familiar with that story? With the Whiskey in the Milk story?
Would you mind giving the page number?
Sure. That's on page 35. It starts in page 35. And the gist of the story is this guy who, he's on a work thing, and he's feeling a little less than, and he shows up to a bar, and he orders a sandwich, and he thinks, maybe I'll just have a little whiskey with my milk. Maybe that would be a great idea, don't you think? And then suddenly the thought crossed my mind that if I was just to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach. And of course, this ends up not turning out very well. It's more whiskey, and then he's pounding on the bar, wondering what happened. But what struck me about this passage the last time I heard it was the paragraph on 135, or on page 35. We told him what we knew of alcoholism and the answer we had found. He made a beginning, his family was reassembled, and he began to work as a salesman for the business he had lost through drinking. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. To his consternation, he found himself drunk half a dozen times in rapid succession. On each of these occasions, we worked with him, reviewing carefully what had happened. He agreed he was a real alcoholic and in a serious condition. He knew he faced another trip to the asylum if he kept on. Moreover, he would lose his family, for whom he had a great deep affection. This paragraph has so much more information than I ever gave it credit for. First of all, he has to be a salesman for the business that he once owned. Like, how humbling is that? How humiliating is that? That would make me want to eat any day of the week. That kind of, like, ego deflation is the first. I was just in a workshop, and I asked a question, and the panel answered it, and I felt a little, like, embarrassed that I'd asked the question. And I had to go up to my room and, like, put my tail between my legs for an hour. I was so humbled by it. And it's the kind of thing that would just send me right into a binge. And All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. And I don't know. For me, that's the answer. And then the other thing that pops out to me about this passage is each time we sat down with him, 5 minutes?
5 minutes.
Thank you. We sat down with him and we worked with him, reviewing carefully what had happened. And that just, the spirit of fellowship and service in this program is so amazing that it's not like, I can't believe you went out and drank again. I can't believe you binged, you crazy dirt binger you, you know? It's like each time we sit down and we find out, we ask, what happened? Let's review it carefully, what happened. And so that's just an example of a passage that I've read a million times, I've heard a million times, and then one day I read it again, and it struck me in a new way. And I love that any page of the big book, any page of the literature is like that. And so I was thinking, like, what am I gonna say and be impressive? And I think I'd rather just let you guys be impressive. And I'm going to read from On Awakening, which is 6. This is page 86. It's the On Awakening passage, which is kind of a post, I guess, 11th step in the 11th step of the first 164. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is clear of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course of to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption on all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. I know at least here in LA, there's a lot of meetings that have that as a reading. You know, you'll hear it every week. There's, you know, especially coming from relapse and also coming from an earlier abstinence that was really rigid and really perfect, you know, or I really thought that it was going to be perfect. It has been so amazing to go through the literature again and again and again and find all of the room. There's so much room for all of us in here. There's so much room for me to be human. And it's like when I first read this book, I thought it was, you know, people call it a design for living, and I just need to follow every single suggestion, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to recover, and I'm never going to be unhappy, and I'm never going to be uncomfortable. And that was what my best thinking got me, got me with meals that were this big, and, like, not able to think about anything but food after 7 years of abstinence. Is that lost? Somebody might want to. Yeah. Thank you. All right. So, you know, and one of the things, the 11th step, which is where this falls in the 12 steps, talks about prayer and meditation, which can be a tricky, for me, it can be a tricky thing to wrap my head around. I can say the prayer of growth. I've got a lot of memorized prayers. And actually, it says in our literature, go ahead and do that. Like, if you don't have a spiritual practice, a religious practice, memorize a few prayers. And I love that there's room for me that you can do that. Like, it's not cheating to just have some prayers by rote. But meditation, like, I did a part of my formal 11-step work was to define each word in the 11th step, and so I went through with the dictionary and defined it. Even the little, like, through and with, and pretty interesting meditation when I defined it, when I looked it up in Webster's, was like, I can't remember exactly, but something about like thinking, being mindful, like thinking quietly. And I thought, I can think. I can definitely think. I'm really, really good at thinking. Thank you. I'll wrap up so that we can all share about the big book. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. And when I open my eyes in the morning, I say those words to myself. We consider our plans for the day, and I think, you know, okay, I have this work thing, and I have this, and I have Swansea, and I'm meeting. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking. And so I'll be like, oh, wait, okay, I've already started thinking about my day, but okay, God, direct my thinking. Asking them to be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking motives. And then it says, under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. And I never thought that was true. I am so afraid of messing up that... Do you want to answer it? Okay. I am so afraid of messing up that I want, like, a guarantee that my inspiration is God-given and that it's not going to be wrong and that I'm not going to, again, feel uncomfortable or feel any pain. And it's like, if I ask God to direct my thinking with as humble a heart as I can muster in that time, I can employ my mental faculties with assurance and just do my day. Just have a day. It's not magic. It's just have a day, and then when I face indecision or when I become disturbed, ask God again, direct my thinking. And I find that I go through this process 30 times a day. Just, okay, what's, just redirect the thinking. And I find for me it just takes a couple seconds. And I guess as a recovering perfectionist, as the speaker last night talked about, like, there's so much comfort in knowing that I can just turn to my higher power at any moment and ask for direction. Ask that God direct my thinking, especially asking to be divorced of self-pity, dishonest of self-seeking motives. So I'm going to wrap up because I really want to hear what you all have to say. But thank you so much for letting me share. All right. The meeting is now open for 3-minute pitches. I think Frank said he'll do 2 minutes and then 1 minute to wrap up. Please focus your share on the topic and limit your sharing to 3 minutes to give others a chance. The session will end at 5:55. And I have a book here if you want to leaf through it or, yeah, I'd love to hear what you all have to say. Did you want to share now, Bill, or did you want to look?
I'm going to find mine.
He's going to find his passages. Do you want me to see if somebody else wants to? Mary Margaret?
I'm Mary Margaret. I'm a compulsive over here.
Hey, Mary Margaret.
I think I love page 135, the family afterward. There's those three little mottos. First things first, live and let live is debit. I love those, mm-hmm. and I used to absolutely hate them mm-hmm. because I thought they were just little cliche that somebody threw at me because I was in angst and trouble and worry and having problems. Well, oh, don't you understand? And they would just throw one of these at me. And then somebody said to me, you know, you keep those little things short, sweet, to the point. Because A, when you're detoxing, it's hard to think of anything long. Any large concept is going to be a little bit beyond you while you're detoxing from all that stuff. And the other thing is, put them in your brains now and practice them so that when you need them, they won't seem unfamiliar and foreign. So that was really helpful to me. And the other thing I absolutely love is in the spiritual experience on 567, that last paragraph on that. It's in the middle of a piece, but it's the final paragraph on 567 because it's so reassuring to see myself in this paragraph where quite often friends of the newcomer are aware of differences long before he is himself and finally realizes He's undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. And it continues in that, like, oh, what a relief. If I didn't do what these folks are telling me to do, I don't have to worry about becoming a saint or anything else. I just have to just do what they suggest, and the change will happen, and I'm not in charge of it. That's very reassuring, and takes a lot of weight off one's shoulders to know that you don't have to have the answers. You just have to be willing to write out your question and answer that night. Mm-hmm.
My name is Bill. I'm a compulsive overeater. Before I read this part, this is on page 276, the fourth edition, by the way. Something to show about the milk and then the whiskey. I heard Joe and Charlie tape, and they were talking about the craving doesn't start until you start. In other words, I'm already eating right now. You might as well have another one. Another fruit, another this, another that. You might as well do it. I think it's the same with alcohol. You know, that taste may be, I've known it on the other occasions of back out again. Anyway, here's one to read from the big book, page 276 of the fourth edition. Start this one, page of the third edition. It says, I'm going to put it how it works for me. The last 30 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I've had my share of problems, headaches, and disappointments because that's life. But also I've known a great deal of joy and peace that is a handmaid of inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends, and with my only friends, an unusual quality of fellowship, for to these people I'm truly related. First through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by, we're working together, sharing our experience with one another, and also sharing a mutual trust, understanding, and love. Without strings, without obligation, we acquire relationships that are unique and precious. There is no more aloneness with that awful ache so deep in the heart of every compulsive eater that nothing before could ever reach. That ache is gone and never need return again. Now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted, needed, and loved. In return for the twinkle and the sure hangover, we have been given the keys to the kingdom.
Does anybody else want to share? Again, I have a book you're welcome to leaf through if you want to. Yes, next. You'll be next.
Hi. Can only bring so much.
I know.
The food is more important.
Totally.
My name is Nikki. I'm a persistent grazer, and I think it's 576, but it's in the appendix. If not, I will paraphrase it. Here it is. It's 568. It's a quote from Herbert Spencer. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man or woman in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. That got me to try a lot of things in program because I thought I knew better and I hadn't even tried what was suggested.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm
Jared. I'm a
folk lawyer.
Sure.
Yes. And to me, I can't find it on here, but to me the most important word, we're having this convention in San Diego, the Archer Convention, and it's named, I wanted the name to be Pausing with the Steps, because the word pause is in here. It's in the 11th step. And to me, that word has saved me from my crazy mind because, I've been absent a long time, but my mind can still keep going and going and going on these little merry-go-rounds. And I have found that when I pause, whatever I'm going through passes. And it might take 10 minutes, but I have to pause throughout the day. And, when I was working, I used to have to pause. Now I'm retired, and I still have to pause because I make up these whole stories in retirement. So that word has really helped me to pause. And the other thing is the second promises, that says we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, for by this time sanity will have returned, and we recoil from it as if from a hot fire. What a miracle that is. That, I mean, to me, those are better miracles than the promises. That is such a miracle. To recoil from the first bite as if it's from a hot fire. That is such a miracle. And, I love to be reminded of it because I take it for granted. You know, being absent a long time, I need to be reminded of what a miracle this program is and how I don't have to take the first bite. You know, so anyway, those are the things that are the things that come to my mind right now, to pause throughout the day. And the other one is to recoil from it. You know, that is an act of God.
This is wonderful. I love this. It's like snippets. It's like a smorgasbord. Okay. I'm eating compulsive overeater anorexic. I've been reading this every morning, basically step 10 and 11. Page 84, I wanted to share this one part. Page 84 in the fourth edition, down in the middle. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. When I first came into the rooms, it was like, okay, what do I have to do? What book do I need to buy? What do I need to study? What do I need to learn? How am I going to, just get this done like I would do anything else? And then I realized that it was going to take a lot more work. But when, through step 10 and 11, I started coming in touch with my spirituality. And the more I did, the more I knew I needed to learn. The more I knew I didn't know. And so what this reminds me is that now I'm excited because I get to know that I have so much more to learn and grow and program more from what am I going to do to get done and be done with this to I get to stay. And I get to learn and grow every day something new and wonderful for me. And this is a great reminder that entering the world of spirit, bringing in the spiritual component, is my greatest gift because with that, I get to keep learning and growing. So thank you.
Thank you.
I can't believe maybe somebody already talked about the jaywalker.
No.
Nobody's talked about the jaywalker.
So one of my favorite... This is how I knew I was in the right place. Do I need a microphone over here?
I don't know.
So this is on page 37, and does everybody know the story of the jaywalker?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody not know what I'm talking about?
You want to hear it again?
Okay. All right. Because it's a couple of paragraphs, and I didn't need to start it.
Go for it.
Okay.
Go for it. That's fine.
All right. So this is more about alcoholism. This is pretty early on. It's talking about the throes and the drugs of it. And it's talking about behavior related to drinking or my behavior related to food, specifically eating sweets. Our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink, first person, cupcake, muffin, as that of an individual with a passion, say, for jaywalking. He gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings to give it up. Up to this point, you would label him a foolish chap, having queer ideas of fun. Luck then deserts him, and he is slightly injured several times in succession. You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. Presently, he is hit again, and this time has a fractured skull. Within a week after leaving the hospital, a fast-moving trolley car breaks his arm. He tells you he's decided to stop jaywalking for good, but in a few weeks, he breaks both legs. On through the years, his conduct continues, accompanied by his continual promises to be careful or to keep off the streets altogether. Finally, he can no longer work. His wife gets a divorce, and he is held up to ridicule. He tries every known means to get the jaywalking idea out of his head. He shuts himself up in an asylum, hoping to mend his ways. But the day he comes out, he races in front of a fire engine, which breaks his back. Such a man would be considered crazy, wouldn't he? When I read that, I thought, this is a ridiculous example. I don't understand why the book is having me read this completely ridiculous example. And the next sentence said, you may think our illustration too ridiculous, but isn't we who have been through the ringer have to admit that if we substituted alcoholism for jaywalking, if I substituted compulsive overeating for jaywalking, the illustration would fit us exactly. That's how I know I'm in the right place.
I'm Matt, I'm over here.
Hey, Matt.
My favorite part of the big book is on 70, page 75, is the fifth concept. Once we have taken the step of holding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye, we can be alone and perfect, we can meet. Our fears fall from us, and we begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. And the reason why that's my favorite part is because when I took my first fifth step, which was my OA sponsor, and, went into all business, of the inventory, but more importantly, all the illegal and immoral things that were part of my history that no one ever knew. The only thing he said when it was over was, that's how we're not like one of us. Mm-hmm. And it was over. Mm-hmm. That is where this program came by for me.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So I'm trying to make it part of my spiritual practice not to have favorites so much, like just to let go of favorites. So one thing that I learned in here is like to just dip, and whatever it is kind of like what my higher power wants me to know. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. So, winner takes all, and then I'll try to find a, So winner takes all. Page 377. It was at this point in my life, I'm going to read at the bottom for some reason. It was at this point in my life that I called Alcoholics Anonymous and asked for help. They sent two ladies over to my house. They sat with me and I told them that I drank because my marriage was bad. One of the ladies held my hand and said, "That is not why you drink." I told them I drank because I was part German. She patted my hand and said, "No, that's not why you drink." Then I told them that I drank because I was legally blind. They said, "No, that's not why you drink." And they started to explain to me that alcoholism is a disease. They shared their stories with me and told me how alcohol had taken over their lives. So again, perfect, just what I need because, I drank essentially because I liked the way it made me feel. And that's what I learned in the doctor's opinion. I didn't drink because I had a bad marriage. I didn't drink because I'm black or an only child or didn't know my dad or whatever all the stuff was that I said made me drink. I drank because I had an a-hole for a boss. And so I had to, of course, go home to a quart of ice cream and a half a sheet of birthday cake because I had a bad day. But then if I had a good day, I always had reasons. But this book taught me that I drank essentially because I liked the way it made me feel, bottom line. And this book also showed me that there's a way out of that. So thanks for being here.
Well, we've got another book to look through. We've got two books we can library out. And for those of you who walked in later, just so you know, the timer is 2 and 1. So when you hear the first speak, it doesn't mean stop. You have to stop talking about this. Who? Big book. Treasure trove. Anyone? Yeah, so Mary Margaret's going to go again.
I'm going to get it. I didn't see what Margaret suggested.
Oh, no,
that's okay. I just did what Margaret suggested and flopped it open to a page, and it's page 296. I should have, and I'm going to put in sugar for alcohol.
Uh-huh.
Although reading this and alcohol is just fine too, but I should have realized that sugar was getting hold of me when I started to become secretive in my eating. I began to have to have supplies on hand for people who might come in.
Uh-huh.
And of course, a half empty bottle or box or jar or pot or whatever wasn't worth keeping. Like, how about gallons of ice cream? Wasn't worth keeping, so I might as well finish it. Naturally, then I had to get more in right away for the people who might come in unexpectedly. But I was always the unexpected person who had to finish whatever was open. I couldn't go to one store, wine store, grocery store, bakery, and look the man honestly in the face and buy another serving of baby something. As I used to do when I had parties and entertained and did normal eating, I had to give them a story. I did this. I would go to the bakery and feed them. Not that party. He didn't care. Give me the money. I wanted him to be sure that I wasn't the one who was going to eat all this stuff. That's my therapeutic center, but I love it.
Thank you.
Okay.
That was 2 of 96. I just dropped it over.
Hi. Yes. Rhonda from Bolivar. I think one of my favorites is page 552. And I don't know if you did resentments already. And it's the paragraph that says, if you have a resentment, you want to be free of. If you will pray for the person or the thing that you resent, you will be free. If you will ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them, you will be free. Ask for their health, their prosperity, their happiness, and you will be free. Even when you don't really want it for them anymore. And your prayers are only words and you don't mean it. Go ahead, do it anyway. Do it every day for 2 whole weeks. And you will find and want it for them. And you will realize that where you used to feel bitterness and resentment and hatred, you will now feel compassionate, understanding, love. It worked for me then, and it worked for me many times since. It will work for me every time I'm willing to work it. Sometimes I have to ask first for willingness, but it's to always come. And because it works for me, it will work for all of us. And as another great man says, the only real freedom a human being can ever know is doing what you ought to do. Because you don't want to do it. I can't tell you how many times I've read that paragraph over and over. And when I came into the program, I was introduced to it by a person who many resentments came about. And she was no longer a part of my life because I had to set a boundary on myself. And I had many resentments, and the Lord has helped me be relieved of those, and I can love her from afar and still be a part of sometimes her children's lives, but not have that resentment and not have that anger and not have the feelings that I used to feel when I was in the room. So
thank you.
Andrea, compulsive reader.
Hi, Andrea.
This is a passage I read often. It's on page 62. If you guys... Okay, so... So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. No, I'm sorry, let me start one paragraph above. Selfishness, self-centeredness. That, we think, is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find that at some point, at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, the alcoholics must be rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. I'll stop there. So when I was new to program, I was having trouble, and I remember calling a fellow, and she said, well, why don't you read page 62 and start with selfishness and self-centeredness? And I was so offended.
Yeah.
I thought, how dirty.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I'm not selfish. I could not see that I was selfish and self-centered. You know, and I just, you know, I always imagined that selfishness and self-centeredness was, you know, how great I thought it was, or how, you know, like I thought I was all that. And I've come to learn that it's not like how much I think of myself, but it's how often I think of myself, you know, and I think about myself a lot. I'm just obsessed with what other people are thinking about me and what I think they're thinking about me and all these things that we talked about in the earlier panel. But when I'm feeling self-obsession. I come to this passage and it just kind of brings me right back, and it's really helpful.
Thank you.
I came in a little late, so I don't know if did anybody read from this beginning of On Awakening and thinking about our day.
Mm-hmm. I did, but you might have a different.
Okay,
you might have a different take on it.
Oh, different spin on it.
Yeah,
I'm from the cultural worship.
I can.
This one little section helps me so much. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration. An intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still, that's where I'll stop right there. I wanted to read this because this helps me in two ways, not just in setting up my day, but like all throughout the big book when I was coming to believe in what my higher power was, there were like indications and clues, like we don't struggle. Like we are surprised how the right answer comes to us. Like there's a certain gentleness and letting go I discovered in my higher power. It wasn't like, you know, forcing my way through and I didn't have to work and figure it out. And when I find these kinds of words in here, it's like affirmation. It reminds me, like, as I do go through my day and being my mind, you know, like, you have to do this and you have to do this. And, like, there's the inner little person with a whip who's, like, telling me how I need to get things done faster and I didn't get enough done. But then I remember this. And I think about we relax and take it easy. And, I mean, it's really been quite transformational. I mean, I work from home now and, like, I don't work that hard. And I make more money than I used to make. And it's shocking to me that I don't have to give my blood to earn a living. Or, you know, it's been, there's 1 minute of that. So, just these ideas in here and my understanding of the God, and that it can be loving and gentle, and that, you know, it just changes everything. And I have to remind myself all the time, because I automatically go back to, you know, it's got to be hard, but we do that, we take it easy. And then the working part of the mind, too, that, like, our intuition is a working part of the mind. I don't have to call. I've been in the program a long time. I don't have to call 5 people to know what to do. Sometimes I just know what to do. Mm-hmm. And that's because that connection with my higher power is strong now. Mm-hmm. So, and it varies, and I still do change things, but, you know.
There
we go.
Sure. I'm Christine. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Christine.
Thank you very much for your share, for everybody who shared. This has been a really wonderful, sweet meeting. And I love this book. I could pick out God knows how many phrases from here. But the one that that I wanted to read tonight is on page 66. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the compulsive overeater, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely great. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of food returns and we eat again. And with us, the heat is to die. If we were to live, we have the degree of anger. The grouch and the rainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for compulsive readers, these things are poison. We turn back to the list, referring to the 4-step list. For it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than food. And I love this because that was when my recovery, my emotional and spiritual recovery started, was when I worked the 4th and 5th step. And so I came to this program, and like many other people, I was not that interested in the steps, and I certainly wasn't interested in the traditions, and there was a lot of stuff that I didn't want your food plan, I'll do this other food plan, thank you. But I got absent, and I had this miraculous pink cloud where, like, all of a sudden I felt good, and I felt good in my body. You know, like I wasn't putting the stuff in that had been hurting me. And my weight was stable. And it was great until I kind of fell off the food cloud, which happens, you know, because I was just working one part of the program. I was going to meetings and I was abstaining from eating impulsively, but I wasn't working the sex. And when I got desperate enough, after being absent for about a year and a half, I was at a meeting and I was sharing about how I was feeling, and somebody came up to me and they said, well, you know, the steps work for that. And I had been going to meetings for a year and a half. I had heard that, but I heard it in a new way, and I started writing a 4-step, and this woman offered to sponsor me. And I get choked up thinking about it, because that was when I started to change on the inside. And I'm so grateful for my abstinence, because it's the foundation. I couldn't have any kind of emotional spiritual growth without it. But just putting down the food is not enough. I was still crazy and bitter and angry, and I mean, I had resentment upon resentment upon resentment. And when I started to write them down, as it said in here, those resentments dominated me. They had power over me. When I started to write them down, I looked at my chart and I read it to another person and I saw what I could do differently. I started to experience a freedom that I've never had. So, I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Page 30, more about alcoholism. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our eating. We know that no real compulsive overeater ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that compulsive eaters of our types are in the grips of a progressive illness. Over a considerable period, we get worse, never better. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make compulsive eaters of our kind like normies. We have tried every manageable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery followed by still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with compulsive eating agree there is no such thing as making a normal eater out of a compulsive eater. Science may one day accomplish this. Thank you. But it hasn't done so yet.
Thank you. This is my dream meeting where you just read through the literature. So we do have time for another short one. Yeah.
I'm a compulsive overeater. My name is Mary. And I know I was thinking this is a great workshop because it's just, even sometimes I open it up and read like one line and I can't get off that one line. And so I guess I'm thinking about the 3rd step prayer. That was just like one thing. I think it's on 63. And, you know, when I'm writing my gratitude list every night and calling it in, I write out the 3rd step prayer at first, and sometimes I cannot get past this. God, I offer myself to you. And you know what? I stop and I go, am I really doing this? This is just words. You know, it really just sometimes just stops me because to build with me and to do with me as you would, you know, as you will. I don't think I will, but you would, you will. You know, that's the part that kind of just stops me in my tracks, because I really have to ask myself, am I really willing to surrender my whole life to this higher power and trust my higher power and not hold back? And I think that's just why I keep coming back to these rooms, and after 30 years, I still say, Am I really giving me myself? Because I want things to go my way. I want my agenda. I don't know if I really want God's agenda, which always turns out to be better than mine. But I still have this, you know, thing about, am I really willing to let you run the show? It just always just brings me back to that. Because I want the rest of it. I want relieving the bondage itself. Mm-hmm. I want that, but to better do your will. I don't know. and then, you know, I want to take away my difficulties. Yeah, but that victory over them, make their witness to those I would help of your power, your love, and your way of life. You know, so it's kind of like this prayer really stops me to think, and especially writing it. When I write it out, I have to think about each word I'm writing. And I, you know, like I say, I have to ask myself that, especially when I wake up, like, I don't want to do it today, and I'm upset about things, and I'm already anticipating they're not going to go my way. And I start writing it.
It's now time to close the session. I would like to thank those of you who gave service at this session and for all of you for attending. After a moment of, let's have a good, nice, good moment of silence and then join the hands and we'll finish with the OA promise. I put my hands in your hand in yours. The OA promise. I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. As we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. Keep coming back. It works if you work it, and you work it.